Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998. Corruption of America's Police.
Hello. 2 weeks ago, I began telling you about the corruption of American police officials by the Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith, the ADL. Because this is such an important matter, such an urgent matter, I promised I'd tell you more about it. It is a shocking thing, and I needed time to present the details to you, details which you can check for yourselves, so that you will have no doubt that I am telling you the truth. It's easy to doubt this truth. It's easy to believe that the ADL is the so-called civil rights organization that the mass media say it is. It's especially easy to believe this when you see ADL officials palling around with prominent politicians and policemen, when you see police chiefs and U.S. senators receiving awards at ADL banquets. I'm telling you that the ADL is an anti-American gang of racketeers who break our laws with impunity because they have succeeded in corrupting our politicians and many of our law enforcement people as well. And now I will prove that charge. First, however, just as an aside, let's note that the parent organization of which the ADL is a branch is named B'nai B'rith. That name may sound strange to your ears because it is a Hebrew name. B'nai means sons, and B'rith, which is often pronounced bris by American Jews, means circumcision. B'rith or bris refers to the ritual circumcision of Jewish males, which, according to Jewish tradition, is a sign of their chosenness or their special covenant with the Hebrew tribal deity Yahweh. You probably won't find B'rith in your dictionary with the apostrophe the way it is spelled by the ADL, but you should be able to find bris. So, in English, B'nai B'rith means the circumcised brotherhood. But really, it is a criminal brotherhood whose members are marked by circumcision, much in the way many Japanese criminals who belong to the Yakuza are marked by a missing fingertip, or members of many drug gangs are marked by a distinctive tattoo. As I told you 2 weeks ago, the ADL was founded in 1913 after a wealthy Jewish factory owner, Leo Frank, was convicted of raping and murdering a 14-year-old girl who worked in his Atlanta pencil factory. The trial of Frank was accompanied by a great deal of very embarrassing publicity for the Jews, and the ADL was organized primarily as a propaganda organization to neutralize such bad publicity. Thus its name, Anti-Defamation League. But since 1913, the ADL has been involved in much more than pro-Jewish propaganda. As an arm of B'nai B'rith, which is an international organization with its tentacles in nearly every country on earth, the ADL has expanded its scope of interests and activities to include virtually everything concerning Jews anywhere. For example, after the success of the Bolshevik Revolution, which resulted in the Jews riding high in Russia, the ADL concerned itself with countering the charge that the Jews had anything to do with communism, which never was popular in mainstream America. After the Second World War, when hundreds of communist spies, virtually all of whom turned out to be Jews, were being rooted out of the U.S. government during the so-called McCarthy era, the ADL worked overtime to discredit anti-communists. To the ADL, anyone who was anti-communist was anti-Semitic. Arnold Forster, who changed his name from Fastenberg and who was the ADL's general counsel for 46 years, wrote in his 1988 memoirs, Square One, about the case of the atomic spies, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, quote, like so many others, Jew and non-Jew alike, I suffered deep pain when the Rosenbergs were executed. End of quote. The ADL had a significant role in the Jewish propaganda effort to portray the flushing out of Soviet agents from U.S. institutions as a witch hunt. Today, most educated Americans who were born too late to experience the late 1940s and early 1950s as adults actually believe the Jewish propaganda myth that it was a dark period in American history when everyone was looking over his shoulder, afraid of being denounced as a spy by a government informant. The Jews, of course, who had been almost to a man partisans of the Soviet Union, were looking over their shoulders. But ordinary Americans certainly didn't feel intimidated by the government's effort to rid itself of the Soviet influences which had gained a strong foothold during the war. In 1948, when the Jews made their first big land grab in the Middle East after the war, forming the State of Israel with land stolen from the Palestinians, the ADL saw its principal new role as a defender of Israel. The label anti-Semite, henceforth, was applied by the ADL to anyone who was pro-Arab or who did not approve of American support for Israel. Being seen as a champion of Israel rather than as a champion of communism helped enormously with the ADL's fundraising efforts. Among others giving large sums of money to the ADL after 1948 were a number of Jewish organized crime figures who felt a strong sympathy for Israel. These gangsters, including Jews such as Meyer Lansky, Longie Zwillman, and Mo Dalitz, were engaged in the white slave trade, in illegal drug trafficking, and in nearly every other kind of criminal activity imaginable. The ADL's relationship with Mo Dalitz, one of the most notorious gangsters in America, may suffice to indicate the pattern. Morris, or Mo Dalitz, like many other organized crime figures before the Second World War, got his start in the illegal booze business during Prohibition. Dalitz was the boss of a criminal organization in Detroit known as the Purple Gang, whose principal activity was smuggling whiskey across the Detroit River from Canada into the United States. The controlled media, through popular fiction and films like The Godfather, have given most Americans the erroneous idea that organized crime in America has been almost entirely an Italian affair. Although Sicilians and Italians made up most of the lower ranks of the mafia and other gangster organizations in the 1920s and 1930s, at the top there were at least as many Jews as Italians, and some of the most notorious and bloodthirsty criminal organizations were entirely Jewish, or nearly so. Murder Incorporated is an example of a Jewish criminal gang. Mo Dalitz's Purple Gang is another example. Dalitz eventually moved his whiskey smuggling operation from Detroit to Cleveland and joined forces with another group of Jewish gangsters there. They moved so much illegal booze across Lake Erie that it became known popularly as the Jewish Lake. It's good to remember that gangsters like Dalitz did much more than smuggle whiskey. They corrupted American society and American government. They bribed judges and politicians and police officials on a huge scale. They murdered people, hundreds of people. And when Prohibition ended in 1933, the gangsters simply switched from smuggling to extortion, loan sharking, and white slavery. After the war, they moved into the drug trade. Toward the end of the war, Dalitz and several other Jewish gangsters, including Bugsy Siegel and Meyer Lansky, began investing their ill-gotten wealth in Las Vegas. Soon they were all casino owners. Dalitz was one of the original owners of the Flamingo, which opened in 1946. Dalitz later took over the Desert Inn and became a part owner of the Stardust Hotel. His gang became known as the Desert Syndicate. Dollitz and Lansky eventually decided that Bugsy Siegel was cheating them, and in June 1947, they ordered him killed in one of the most spectacular rubouts of the post-war period. After that, Mo Dollitz was the undisputed godfather of Las Vegas. Over the years, a great deal of Mo Dollitz's criminal income found its way into the coffers of the ADL. So much so that in 1985, the ADL gave its so-called Torch of Liberty Award to Dollitz. The award ceremony was a black tie affair featured on the front page of the ADL bulletin, in which Dollitz was praised as a philanthropist and deep appreciation was expressed for his financial contributions to the ADL. And of course, the controlled media were discreet about the relationship between Dollitz and the ADL. There were never any headlines in the New York Times or the Washington Post about the ADL's ties to the mob. But anyone who has the time to dig back through the issues of the ADL bulletin at a major library will find Dollitz on the front page in 1985. Mo Dollitz himself was killed 4 years later in 1989 in a gang shootout, which also left seven other people dead. But the ADL had plenty of other Jewish gangsters contributing money by then. The ADL was able to flaunt its relationship with Mo Dollitz and accept tainted money from him and other gangsters, money which was the product of criminal activity, without fear of legal repercussions, because at the same time it had been cultivating its relationships with Jewish organized crime bosses, it also had been cultivating its relationships with law enforcement officials, especially the FBI. During the post-war period, the Jews spearheaded the effort to force racial integration on America, and they were bitterly resented by segregationist organizations such as the Ku Klux Klan. The Klan struck out at the Jews almost as much as at blacks. The most newsworthy Klan effort in that regard was the killing of two Jewish agitators, Andrew Goodman and Michael Schwerner, in Mississippi in June 1964. The Hollywood propaganda film Mississippi Burning was based on this incident. To get revenge against the Klan for the Goodman and Schwerner killings, and also to put the Klan in its place, the ADL arranged a trap. Working in collusion with the FBI, the New Orleans office of the ADL, headed at that time by Adolf Botnick, paid two leaders of the Klan in Mississippi, brothers Alton Roberts and Raymond Roberts, to initiate a Klan project to bomb the home of Meyer Davidson, the ADL leader in Meridian, Mississippi. On June 30, 1968, two unsuspecting Klan members drove up to Davidson's home, intending to put a bomb on his front porch. They were Kathy Ainsworth, a young schoolteacher, and Thomas Parents. The FBI was hiding in the bushes, waiting for them, and opened fire on them as soon as they got out of their car. Kathy Ainsworth was killed instantly in the hail of bullets, and Thomas Parents lay near death after being shot 70 times by the trigger-happy FBI agents. Clearly, the plan was to kill both Ainsworth and Parents execution style as a warning to the Klan not to mess with the Jews. And as I said, the ADL and the FBI together set up this murder trap. The ADL supplied the cash for the informants and provocateurs, and the FBI supplied the executioners. The killing of Kathy Ainsworth was nothing less than a planned murder by the ADL. This sort of criminal collaboration between the FBI and the ADL has continued to the present day. The ADL always has been an espionage organization, with much of its activity consisting in the gathering of personal information and the building of dossiers on everyone perceived as hostile to Jewish interests, and also on tens of thousands of other Americans as well that the ADL might want to apply pressure to at some time in the future. The FBI is prohibited by law from investigating people unless it has some evidence that they are involved in criminal activity. But the ADL operates under no such restrictions. The ADL hires people to steal the trash from the curbs in front of the homes of people it is interested in. And it engages in many even less savory practices. And the ADL is generally happy to swap information with the FBI, providing the FBI with confidential personal information on people the FBI is interested in but has no legal basis for investigating. The ADL and the FBI do favors for each other. Occasionally, however, the ADL's espionage work has gotten it into trouble. In addition to stealing the trash from in front of people's homes, the ADL has illegally obtained confidential information on thousands of Americans by bribing employees in departments of motor vehicles or in police departments, including the San Francisco Police Department. When the San Francisco police realized that some of their confidential files had been stolen by the ADL, they obtained search warrants. The Los Angeles and San Francisco offices of the ADL were raided by the police twice, first on December 10th, 1992, and then again on April 8th, 1993. In these raids, thousands of stolen police files were recovered. The police also raided the homes of an ADL undercover agent, Roy Bullock, and a sergeant in the San Francisco Police Department, Thomas Girard. Girard, who had been stealing the police records for the ADL, subsequently fled to the Philippines to avoid prosecution. Just prior to the April 1993 raids, San Francisco Assistant District Attorney John Dwyer told news reporters, quote, "The ADL is the target. Their involvement is just so great. People have called this the Girard case. Now it's the ADL case. Girard is just their guy in San Francisco. The ADL is doing the same thing all over the country. There is evidence that the ADL had police agents in other cities. The case just gets bigger every day. The more we look, the more we find people involved." End of quote. Although the politically correct media in America don't like to publicize news which doesn't fit, the ADL story was too big to suppress, and you can find extensive news coverage of the ADL raids in the Los Angeles Times and the San Francisco Chronicle in December 1992 and April 1993, including the statement I just quoted by the San Francisco Assistant District Attorney. Among the 12,000 files on individuals and 950 files on organizations the police recovered in their raids were files on the Arab American Anti-Discrimination Committee, the AADC, and many of its members. ADL employee Roy Bullock had been assigned the task of infiltrating the Arab group, and he had even gone so far as stealing a key to their Santa Ana, California office. The ADL had an especially strong hatred for the AADC because it countered the ADL's pro-Israel propaganda with news reports on Israeli atrocities against Palestinians. On October 11, 1985, the chairman of the AADC, Alex O'Day, was killed by a booby-trap bomb when he opened the door of his office in Santa Ana, California. It didn't take the FBI very long to figure out who the bombers were, but the three Jewish suspects fled to Israel before they could be arrested. Even though Bullock had the stolen key of the AADC office in his possession at the time of the bombing, neither he nor any of his employers in the ADL were ever charged in connection with O'Day's murder. Also in 1985, Jewish activists used a bomb to kill another target of ADL spying and hate propaganda. He was Sherim Suopsikov, accused by the ADL of having worked with the Germans in his native Belarus during the Second World War. On August 15, 1985, a bomb exploded on Suopsikov's front porch in Paterson, New Jersey, mortally wounding him. The ADL used its illegally obtained files in other ways as well, passing some of them to foreign governments. At a court hearing in February 1993, the San Francisco Assistant District Attorney testified that the file of one American citizen, which had been stolen by the ADL, had been passed on to the government of Israel. That citizen was Mohammed Jarad, a man of Palestinian ancestry who owned a grocery store in Chicago. When Jarad visited his relatives in Israeli-occupied Palestine in January 1993, he was seized by the Israeli secret police as a result of information supplied to them by the ADL about Jarad's pro-Palestine activity in the United States. Now, the really disturbing thing about all of this ADL activity is not that the organization accepts money from known crime bosses, or that it spies on American citizens and turns some of the information over to foreign governments, or even that it sets up assassinations or incites terrorist bombings against its enemies. There are other criminal organizations in the United States even more heavily involved in violent criminal activity than the ADL. What makes the ADL more dangerous than any of these others is its ongoing corruption of police officials. In public ceremonies, very much like the one honoring gangster Mo Dalitz, the ADL presents awards to police officials and politicians, including the same Torch of Liberty award they gave to Dalitz. The ADL regularly persuades local, state, and national police officials to appear on the speaker's platform when the ADL is denouncing some new enemy of the Jews, just as they had police officials around the country at their press conferences a month ago when they declared me the most dangerous man in America. The ADL also offers training seminars to police departments to teach them how to recognize and deal with right-wing terrorists, believe it or not. And the police departments take them up on it. They have their officers sit and listen to the ADL with its history of un-American and criminal activity, tell them how to deal with people like me. Why would any American police official accept an award from the same organization which had given an award to Mo Dalitz and praised him on the front page of its monthly publication? Why would any police official be seen in public with members of an organization caught red-handed with stolen police files? Why would the FBI collaborate with such an organization? I think that in part it is naivete. Policemen tend to be respecters of authority, even more so than the average citizen. If the controlled media praise the ADL as a respected civil rights organization, and if ADL officials are obviously wealthy and well-connected men with big offices and lots of secretaries, the police tend to feel that they must be all right. The feeling is that nobody who is rich and powerful and gets good press can be bad. The cops either haven't seen the few media reports where the ADL got caught red-handed, or they've conveniently forgotten. But more often than naivete, I'm afraid that corruption is the reason for the collaboration. Certainly that is the case with the FBI. The FBI hasn't forgotten about Mo Dalitz, or the stolen police files, or the bombing of Alex O'Day's office. They certainly haven't forgotten about the arranged murder of Kathy Ainsworth. And that's frightening. The ADL alone is bad enough. The ADL teamed up with corrupt policemen all across the country should be a nightmare for every decent American. Thanks for being with me again today.